and welcome to Table Talk. This is Jack speaking, and in the virtual studio is...
Graham, I'm here as well. Welcome to 2023 Table Talk. Happy New Year, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed our highlights episode. If you haven't listened to that, it was really good fun. We look back on the highs and lows of last year. So do go back, have a listen to that, and you can delve into some of the archives and enjoy that. Graham, how are you feeling about 2023?
I'm feeling good. I've had a nice long rest over Christmas and New Year, which has been good. I'm actually not even back to work yet. I'm not back to work until Monday, which is amazing. So I've had like almost, I've had over 3 weeks off. So I'm feeling fresh, feeling good, and looking forward to getting stuck in, really.
Yeah, I feel like...
How are you feeling?
Yeah, good. I still think, I listen to The Rest Is Politics a lot, and I think Alistair Campbell's bringing me down a bit because he keeps saying the country is broken. I just feel a bit sad about the UK at the moment. So
that's
after some positive vibes, please.
Well, I feel like, you know how they say comparison is the thief of joy?
Go on.
Right? Have you heard that saying?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so I hear comparison is the thief of joy, which I think is quite a good saying in most instances. But I think, I don't know if you've been reading the news recently about what's going on in the US and their elections for Speaker of the House and all that kind of thing. So they've gone through 10 votes, I believe, at this point. That is the longest it's taken to elect a speaker since like 1858 or something. And at the moment, the House of Congress, one of the two major houses of government in the United States, is completely useless until they elect a speaker. So at this point, I feel like comparison is sort of bringing me some joy, because at least we're not in complete gridlock like they are over there. It's madness over there at the moment.
Okay, thank you. I feel better about the UK already.
Hopefully some positivity for you as we start 2023.
Okay, I think that's enough waggling on the tee, because in our virtual studio, to help us in this key month of January to look back and look forward, we have... Robin Hamm. Robin, thank you so much for joining us in the virtual studio.
Hey guys, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sorry for that really long introduction, but thanks for waiting patiently.
It's good.
How are you feeling as we head into another year?
Well, 2023, it's here, isn't it? That's the kind of thing it is. And you're suddenly kind of staring out into the unknown. I always kind of feel it's like, you know, when you, like, I live on the edge of Cumbria, and you kind of go out for a walk, a hike, and you get to the car park, and you kind of see this kind of path going off into the distance, into the crags, and you're kind of like, wow, where's that going to take me? And I often feel, man, I just, you know, I still feel exhausted from the last year. But at the same time, it's exciting because it's new opportunities, and it feels like a blank slate as well. And I guess we're going to talk a bit about that.
We are indeed. We're going to take a journey up the Rocky Crags.
There we go.
I like that. It's making me feel good being
sat. It's an exciting image.
Being sat in London in Glamorsmith. So how would you describe yourself, Robin, in three words? Like, what are you? Who are you?
Yeah.
In three words.
That's a hard question. You guys have got to answer that for me. I don't know. I mean, I am a dad. I'm a husband. I'm a son.
Okay.
We're going to talk a little bit about roles later, but those are, I guess, are kind of three defining roles that I have. I live up in a town called Barrow, which is on the edge of Cumbria. My 9 to 5 is I'm a pastor. I'm a church minister, but I love writing. I coach football. Those are kind of two of my big things that I do apart from that.
Nice. Okay, awesome. I stumbled across you, Robin, because of your 2023 audit.
Sure.
This is something that you kind of came up with, I think, but what is a life audit?
Yeah, a life audit. It's kind of scary title, isn't it? Maybe,
it is.
I don't know what you're used to auditing in life, but basically a life audit is, think of it as a stock take. Okay. So in a nutshell, it's looking back, it's looking forward, and then it's also trying to look in. It's basically just taking some time to do that process. And a new year, you could do it at any point in your year. But a new year feels like a natural point to have that process go on in your life.
Okay. And did this like grow out of New Year's resolutions and that sort of thing? Or how did you come up with this idea of a life audit?
Yeah. So New Year's resolutions are kind of massively divide people, don't they? Like, so I think you kind of got two or three camps when it comes to New Year's resolutions. So the classic is obviously you kind of got the whole new year, new you. It's a new dawn. You're going to seize the day.
Okay. So new year, new you.
New year, new you is a big one, isn't it? So then you've got kind of a whole, I've seen it all before, it doesn't kind of work camp. So do you know that, you know, Brian Bilston, he's a poet. He writes a poem a day online. shares it. And he had a brilliant poem on New Year's Eve where he said, this was the year that was not the year. So I've got it scribbled down here so I can recite a little bit. This was the year that was not the year I became a household name. Action figures were not sold of me. I wasn't made a dame. This was the year that was not the year I spent less time on my phone. Nights of passion did not happen in boutique hotels in Rome. And he kind of goes on, this was not the year. Then he finishes, this was the year I didn't get that much done, much like this, the year before, much like the one to come. So there's kind of that, this kind of this camp of, you know, actually, I've seen it all before, and what's the point? But then I noticed Fern Cotton, I think it was January 1st, she put out, buy into all the hype of being a new version of yourself this year. Just be you and ride the waves as best you can.
Okay.
So that's kind of like a little bit different. It's a little bit different, isn't it? So it's kind of saying, well, you're enough. Life is hard. Just kind of do you. And there's obviously something in all three of those that is appealing. So there's a little bit of actually, yeah, I do want to change. I kind of had this desire within me to change. And yet I've also kind of done this before and maybe I've not seen much change. And yet life is hard. And there's a sense in which actually, yeah, we know kind of it's difficult. And so life audit is basically trying to step back from all that and go actually trying to do something a little bit bigger and think beyond the kind of the classic resolution kind of thing. And yeah, we kind of, we put it together. I put it together a few years ago and we did it as a kind of a, in our local church community here. And then we put it online and it was really popular and obviously kind of tapped into something. And people said they really valued kind of that stepping back. And so I've just tried to keep refreshing it each year. And as I grow and think about what I find valuable, try and shape it.
Brilliant. Thanks,
Graham, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
So do you know what? This was an idea that my wife Antonia came up with, and I was somewhat
You've been
skeptical.
Allocated a
Well, it wasn't actually a resolution for me, but it was an exercise in coming up with. She was like, let's think about 2023 and let's spend some time thinking about what we would like to do in 2023.
Okay, a mini audit.
It was kind of a mini audit. I think we called it like a vision for 2023. And I've actually heard of some people saying, project yourself forward. Think about yourself on the 31st of December, looking back on 2023. Initially, I'm quite skeptical of these sorts of things. So I kind of went into it like a bit of a sort of moody child, like this is stupid. And then I got into it and I actually found it really helpful. And I came away with a whole load of stuff written down thinking, yeah, that sounds great. So I felt quite hopeful about 2023 and quite sort of intentional and prepped. But what I would love to hear from Robin is this the fifth year that you have been doing this?
Yeah.
So you've told us kind of what, in theory, an audit, a life audit is. What has been your experience of actually doing them? Now that you've done five, have they been helpful? Have they been challenging? Have you actually completed them throughout the year?
Like life just happens, isn't it? Life happens so fast and it'll be the summer before we know it, won't it? And then it'll be another new year. And it's so good to just take that step back process and think about, well, actually, not just what do I want to do this year? And that's kind of the obvious question, isn't it? But actually, who am I going to become? Where am I going? What's the kind of direction that my life is, not just in terms of a list of kind of bucket lists, but actually the kind of the character formation and the kind of person and the kind of relationships I want to have. I found it helpful to do that. You kind of think, well, actually, yeah, this is a big thing in my life, but I'm coming back to it a year again and again and again. And some of the same things that you're kind of wanting to grab onto are going to keep coming up. But that's okay, because you're trying to set a trajectory, really, that this is where I want to be. And yeah, we kind of talked a little bit about it there, but actually involving some of the key people in your life as part of that, I think, is really helpful as well.
Yeah.
Not just seeing it as you as an individual, but actually
externally audited. Externally audited.
There we go. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Get to a full shakedown.
Yeah, get the life auditors in.
Oh. No, but I mean, that's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is scary. People. But you're right. I think it's best done in community or with others, especially people who know you well. I've downloaded the document, and just for our listeners, it's really cool what Roman's put together. It's like it sounds scary. It's a 22-page document. It kind of takes you through the different questions that you can answer. I think what's interesting about what Robin said is, and kind of what you hinted at in the New Year's resolutions, is it gets quite deep quite quickly in terms of your view of the world. Now, it's very popular, isn't it, in terms of thinking about productivity, thinking about habits. You've got the classics like the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. You've got productivity podcasts like the Diary of a CEO or High Performance Podcast, all those sort of things. I think one thing that I'd like to frame this whole discussion is that often they start with a premise or a worldview that is basically we want to be very successful people. Basically, we want to be rich or famous. And I thought, let's just stop before we go any further and just ask the question, how is what we're doing, this kind of life audit, how is that intrinsically linked to the way we view this world and where we're trying to get to? That you can't remove the two, really, can you?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Yeah, it does feel like it, we don't do deep, do we? I think, yeah, in my experience, many people aren't looking for the meaning of life, but what they're looking for is like a method of life.
Yes.
And we want to kind of do life well. We talk about that winning at life or I'm losing at life. And yeah, perhaps often what we see reflected around us is kind of visions of success and finance, making a name. But I don't think that's always necessarily wanting your name in light. Sometimes it's actually, there's just this desire, I want to make a difference. I want to have a legacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want this to count. And I think, yeah, that then flows into, well, what makes a life that counts? If I kind of go back to those kind of different attitudes to New Year's, you know, the new year, new you, you know, there's a dissatisfaction there, isn't there, with the world, with myself. I want to go get it. But the way I go get it is I need to do something. Then you've got Fern Cotton, Just Do You. And it's kind of saying, yeah, this world is tough and messy, but actually, again, the resources are within you. So you kind of, you're peeling back the layers a little bit and seeing what's going on underneath this. And then the Brian Bilston, the poem I quoted, well, he's kind of like, well, life is fleeting, right? And our ability to change things is kind of limited. And again, it's this worldview of actually, life is this bigger thing and we're a little bit helpless. So I think your approach to New Year's actually, yeah, it does. It kind of goes deep into what you think about the world and your values, really. Even if those values are things that we perhaps haven't necessarily owned, they're things we've kind of absorbed from what's around us.
You're so right. We love method at the moment. We love habits and tech and doing life well. And we've almost tried to divorce that from, yeah, but why are you actually on this planet? You can live a good life, kind of, but what's the purpose? I think it's so interesting. I don't think we've ever taken doing life well to the professionalization that we have recently. Would you agree, Graham?
I totally agree. And I think that it's very easy to sort of sleepwalk your way into that without really questioning the underlying motive.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even if, say you are one of the most hyper-productive people on the planet and you make a massive difference, you know, that doesn't change the fact that you've got 70, 80, 90 years on this planet. And then what? Like, will you be remembered in 1,000 years? Is that difference going to be ongoing? Even if it is, but yeah, I suppose we're using quite a lot of big phrases here, you know, a life audit, a worldview. I understand where you're coming from with that, but I'm almost a bit overwhelmed by them. And I don't know if any of our listeners will be feeling that way as well. But if you were to try and help someone unpick and maybe identify what their worldview is, how could they go about doing that? What questions can they ask themselves to try and land and understand that?
I think, like, you might think of the iceberg. So you might think of actually this part of us that is on the surface, the decisions that we're making, the things that we would kind of clearly see as the priorities in our lives. But it's recognizing that the whole of who we are that actually probably is slightly below the surface. And it's just trying to say, well, actually, that is quite a big part of why we are the way we are. Or we might think of a tree. So, you know, you've got your fruit, which is actually how I spend my money this week, this month, or who I spend my time with, or what I'm trying to get out of my job. That's kind of like the fruit. But actually, those fruit, the branches and then the trunk and then the roots are flowing out of, I guess what you might say are sort of convictions or almost like base assumptions. And I think the weird thing about, as you say, we kind of sleepwalk into this is lots of those things are things that we perhaps haven't really ever articulated, and yet we are building our lives on them. And so it can just be helpful to, again, to kind of go, well, what is going on under the surface? What are the kind of the unnamed values in my life, like what I think is important, what do I think makes a life that counts, what am I gonna sacrifice other things for the sake of. It's that process, if that makes sense.
And often, yeah, Robin, sorry, it makes perfect sense. I think that's really helpful, tree or the iceberg. Often it means, because we have lots of good things often in our lives, not always, and some, I'm sorry if you're listening, your life's really tough at the moment, but often if you are someone that, it would be, my career or my family or, yeah, my wife or my kids or a particular friendship. And they're quite big things. But I think one thing people find hard is to order that. Not everything can have that top position in your life. And somehow you need to choose, well, I'm going to spend time with this person, not that person. Or I'm going to work these amount of hours, but not so much that. I've been talking a lot with friends about that recently. Like, how do you go about ordering your life? That will flow out of some quite deep convictions, but they might be hard to articulate. Like, well, actually, career is really important to me because what I want to do is just be a really successful manager in 20 years time or earn this much, and so I'm actually going to work till 9 p.m and I'm not going to see my friends. And be like, but it's not like you've sat down and wrote down a piece of paper, because you don't really want to write that down, because you're like, oh crap, that sounds a bit. So this is the whole idea of a life audit, isn't it? You're
absolutely
looking at
the fruit.
You're looking at the fruit, and then you kind of let your eyes go down to the root and be like, okay, what's driving this fruit, and am I happy with it?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's you know, we have that phrase, don't we? First things first. And it's trying to go, well, actually, what are my first things? And as I look back on the last year, well, are the things that actually I have spent most of my time doing, are they the things that I want to be about? So it's looking back, reviewing that, as well as looking ahead. Mm. And that can be convicting and challenging.
So speaking of convicting and challenging, right? Sorry, this is a little anecdote from my time over New Year up in Aberdeen with my family. My brother said something that I found quite challenging. So he said there was a series that he saw advertised on Netflix, and it was 10 episodes of 1 hour each. And he said that he was just about to press play. And he was like, I then realized in my life, I often complain about, like, I'm busy. I've got lots of completing things clamoring for my time. I was totally willing to plow into 10 hours of TV, you know, with no thought of what else I could spend that time on.
That's a good.
And he was like, it just made me think. And I was like, wow, how many hours of Netflix did I watch in 2022? You know, and what could I have done with that time? And I just think it's really interesting when you start to consider, and I love that analogy of like, what is the fruit that I want to come out of my tree endeavors, right?
And Graham, what sort of tree with you? I think you'd be you'd be a huge oak, wouldn't you?
Or like a redwood, or like a, yeah, that's what I would hope. Like a weeping willow or something.
Graham, the weeping willow.
Yeah. Hopefully it would be like a nice big oak tree or something like that. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. But I just thought that was quite a helpful question. And I think maybe to what you're saying there, Robin, it was one of the sort of audit type questions that just made me think, what's really driving me? How am I prioritizing my decisions here?
Mm. Okay, so let's kind of walk through the audit together.
We're going to do a life audit. Oh, this is fun.
Yeah, let's we're going to do it. So the first part of your audit is looking back. The ones I picked out were, what were some of your greatest joys in 2022? And what were some of your deepest struggles in 2022?
Pretty jumping deep into the deep end there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, okay, this is going to be really cheesy, but I've gone down to a 4.5 day week, Robin, and I asked work. This time last year, I want to go down 4.5 days a week, because Friday, I definitely want to do school drop-off and school pick-up, because I've got 2 school-age kids now. And when I drop my eldest off, and she runs up the staircase, and then there's a little window halfway up, and I wait at the bottom, and she's like, Daddy, will you wave to me when I get to the window? And then when she gets the window, she can just go on tiptoes, and I can just see her face. And then I pull like some stupid face at her, or like wave at her, and then she does the same back to me, and then off she runs. And then when I pick her up and she runs out of school and gives me a hug, I'm like, oh my goodness, I love it. This is a great joy in my life. And I'm so glad that I'm paid 10% less to enjoy this joy. Yeah. So there we go.
Sounds like it's an easy trade-off for you, Jack. That's good. And what is in 10% less to go and do that? It sounds like that's a no-brainer in your mind, which is great.
Thanks, Graham.
I guess what you're doing is it's so good to reflect, isn't it? Because you're then acknowledging things that you might not have seeing, you're acknowledging feelings that you might not have actually noted, and potentially connected to that are decisions you've made, and you're kind of seeing the value of those decisions. Yeah, so for me, like, often it's helpful to think it's in terms of like memories, milestones, and moments. So for me, it was actually, we had a really special time in the summer. Like, we had a family holiday and privileged to be able to do that. But actually, it was good. We were able to kind of take a fortnight and spend time with the kids, and just, yeah, recognizing at the end of the year, actually, that was a real high point, wasn't it? And actually, we want to do that kind of thing in terms of how we do life.
Love it.
Love that. I think it's great when you reflect back on that kind of stuff and realize, like, yeah, that was a real high point, and we can be intentional about scheduling that kind of stuff in and making space for it. Because I think it's often challenging when you're in amongst it, when you're in the weeds of a busy year. It can be quite hard to think, I'm going to take some time out and prioritize just being with family. But then I think when you reflect back on it, having done it, it's like, yeah, that was so, so worth it.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to move us on. So that's looking back. You can imagine that being quite helpful to write those things down in your audit file. So next is recalibrating the heart. So I think this is going back, Robin, to the roots of the tree or the underwater part of the iceberg. Is that right? Is that what you're getting at here?
I'm going to need a little bit of an explainer here, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
So heart. Yeah, heart's a funny one, isn't it? We're kind of obviously not talking about our kind of our physical, biological hearts. So the Bible speaks of the heart as, like, in a sense, the seat of who you are, of your will and your desires. And I guess it's kind of trying to go, well, what's my heart set on as I go into this new year? So here's a little bit of philosophy. Tell me if this is going too deep. So
hit us.
Plato, your boy Plato, says that right action flows from right thinking. Then you've got in your other corner, you've got Aristotle, who kind of flips that over and says right thinking comes from right action. So you become what you do. And for me, the Christian worldview, Christian kind of belief, says actually the key is your heart. So you're not just a physical being, and you're not just a kind of a thinking thing. You're a worshiping being. You're someone who sets your heart on something. And so recalibrating the heart is kind of going, yeah, this is deep, but actually what is my heart set on? In a kind of sense, what is my love life? Not just in terms of romantic relationships, but what's kind of occupying the deepest part of who I am? Because that is what will shape us. We'll chase after where our hearts are set. And yeah, that kind of, again, is can be an uncomfortable thing to think about, and probably needs other people to help us reflect on. But I think massive value in looking at things at that level.
What are some of the questions that you ask to get into that? So say if you're going through your own life audit and you want to understand where your heart is at, what are some of the things you're asking of yourself? What are some of the things that the people around you might ask to you to try and uncover those things?
Yeah, so I mean, this is kind of a way into that. So if someone said to you, how would you complete this sentence? If I'm honest with myself, life only seems to have meaning when ... there'd probably be a number of things we would flag up for any of us as we answer that question. But it's trying to kind of go, here's a kind of a deeper look at who I am and what I think counts at life.
So it's our deepest longing and desire, but sometimes it might not be a person or a thing, or it could be like money. You know, if we're honest, it could be like, I just really want lots of money. But often it's almost something deeper than that. Be like, yeah, but why do you want money? And it's like, oh, because above all else, I just want to be comfortable, maybe. Or above all else, I just want security. Or above all else, I want praise and recognition from people. There's like levels to this often, isn't there? And yeah. Robin, you say in your audit that our roles must flow out of our given identity rather than our roles effectively creating our identity.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. From a Christian point of view, identity is something that actually we don't try and earn or achieve. It's something we receive. It's like, it's gift. So this big word at the heart of Christianity is grace. And it's all about actually gift. You've been given who you are. And I often say this to people, you know, imagine a coin. On one side of the coin, you kind of got your heads, and in the sense in which you've been created, so you've received your created identity, who you are as a person, as a Christian. I believe, well, that's, we've been created, we've been made with dignity and with value as who we are. But you flip that over, and tails, you've also got this sense of, within the Christian story, you have been you've been loved. We might speak of being redeemed. So someone has reached out and grabbed you with their love so that you can know a relationship with God in this sense. And so for me, it's receiving that identity has to be at the heart of who I am. And then, yeah, the roles and responsibilities I've got, brilliant and great to kind of want to invest in them. But actually, they're not who I am at a fundamental level.
Which is interesting because when I said Robin in three words, you said, I'm a dad.
Yeah.
What did you say?
I'm a dad and a husband
and a son.
Yeah.
But it's true, isn't it? In some ways, is that big enough as our identity to be a dad, a son, a husband? I mean, that's as big as it gets in terms of earthly relationships. But what you're saying is, no, there needs to be something even bigger and more fundamental to who Robin Ham is. And that is that you are made by God and then you're actually loved by that God as well. Okay, let's just flow that out. So then just to help our listeners. So why, going back to this section, what are we trying to recalibrate then? What are we trying to do with our hearts? So you've got this given identity that you just spoke about, and then these other identities that we kind of lurch towards. What is the recalibration exercise?
So we're trying to set our hearts, we're trying to set our loves on what is ultimate. And again, for me, it makes sense when you bring in the Christian story, because you're kind of saying, actually, what is ultimate is the fact that I've been made to know God, made in the image of God, and I've been loved. And so that has got to be what I am fixing my who I am-ness on. I want to know this God and know that that's the kind of the deepest, most precious part of me. And yet I go through life and my heart is being captured and captivated by all sorts of other things. Lots of those things will be great things and good things, but this is about going, well, actually, can they, as you put it, can they bear the weight of a human's love and a human sense of worth and dignity and value? And
I find that really helpful, actually. And I think that we did an episode with Graham Daniels, who's the head of Christians in Sport. And I think he used sport as an amazing analogy for this, of people at the pinnacle of their careers achieving amazing success. But that is temporary. Mm. And when all of that, even that incredible level of success, when that comes to its inevitable conclusion in a career, like, where do you go from there? If you've based everything on that, where do you go when that thing
you're
ends?
A pundit,
you go be Gary Lineker, but eventually that will come to an end. So I just find that it's like almost extrapolating it to its end point. Like, is this thing going to sustain me? Can I completely trust that this thing will never let me down? And whether that's career, whether that's money, whether that's security, whether that's even your closest relationships. It's like, well, can I 100% trust that in no given scenario, these things will eventually leave me or let me down?
And boom.
I think,
So that's the exercise. You're going, I'm recalibrating my heart. Is my deepest desire something that is actually going to let me down? Or is my deepest desire something solid enough that can take the whole meaning and weight of my life? I mean, that is a huge question, and love to explore it more on Table Talk in future episodes. Right. Okay. The next one is, I think we're coming back up the tree, to use your analogy, a little bit. So we've gone deep as we can in terms of our deepest desires. And now we're thinking about our days. Do you know what I mean? How we spend our time, our habits. How do you help people do that, Robin? Like, Graham Grave, a brilliant example of starting to watch a Netflix series for 10 hours, or on your iPhone, you can see your daily screen time. But
I've just stopped looking at that.
Oh, really?
It's too scary.
Can we just connect this back to our hearts? So what are you trying to do with your days once you've worked out your deep desire?
So there's a really challenging quote from a American writer called Annie Dillard, and she says, how we spend our days is how we spend our lives. And for me, that's one of those quotes that kind of knocks you off your feet and you realize, actually, exactly that. You can't build your life out of anything apart from ordinary days, right? And so if you don't push it down, who you want to be, push it down into your ordinary days, then you may as well not bother. One of the stages in this audit is to go, well, actually, what are my days going to be about? This is like, there's been masses written on habits recently. So James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, probably been one of the most popular, where he basically, you know, makes the point that actually these little small, seemingly insignificant things can have an enormous impact. And he says, if you focus on the habit, then actually the score takes care of itself. And so I think we turn the page on a new year. We kind of think, oh, who do I want to be? What do I want to do? And kind of have this kind of very abstract sense of the perfect life. And this is making that kind of next step of going, actually, you've got to think about your days and your moments. That's how we build our lives. And so there's a real intentionality about, well, how does this overall value cash out in today? Am I going to make time to pick my kids up from school? Am I going to take time to chill? Or how do we kind of push this deep down? It's weird that people in previous generations have talked about having a rule of life. The word rule that they were using was basically the word for like a trellis. So actually,
what's a trellis?
A trellis is when you're gardening and you plant
up in
rows.
Cumbria.
One of the things
when you're gardening,
we have mountains and gardens.
I've never seen.
I'll send you some pictures. So
I live in London. What's a garden?
I've got a balcony.
Well, you can have a trellis on a balcony. Your balcony is basically a trellis.
Perfect.
It's the frame, isn't it? So the vine needs something to grow on that provides the structure and keeps it flourishing, protects it from stuff on the ground. And so a rule of life, a kind of a game plan, call it that, is just a way to kind of go, well, what do I want my days to look like in terms of where my big picture life roots heart is going to be focused on. And it does feel weird to kind of go from one to the other, but it's so important, I think, to make the link between the two.
I'm going to ground that now. So one of the things I've decided to do this year is get up half an hour earlier.
Wow. Okay?
So now the alarm goes at 6:25. That leaves 5 minutes. We've got a 15-year-old Nespresso machine. We have to press it like 3 or 4 times to get an espresso now. So it leaves 5 minutes to press the button like 4 times. Then I'm back upstairs and open up my Bible, and I'm reading one chapter of the Bible a day and then praying about what I read. It's just simple for me. Going back to what you said, Robin, I believe I'm created. I just want to know the guy who created me better. And I just want that to be real in my life. To be like, no, I actually believe this. I'm created, and I spend half an hour first thing in the morning, be like, okay, what is that God like? And how do I get to know him and his character? And is he even good? And what's his plans for my life? And what happens when I die? And all those things happen between 6:30 and 7 o'clock. And it's ordinary because, yes, my two-year-old's like, Daddy, I need a poo halfway through. And I go down. But that's the whole point, isn't it? It's kind of, it's weaving in that kind of big picture, why am I even here? What am I doing on this planet? To the ordinary life of wiping a two-year-old's bum.
And Jack, having spent some time at your house, you do seem to be the go-to poo man.
I'm the poo man, people.
Yeah. But I think, so to summarize how this is landing in my brain then, what we've said basically is...
A rare window into G's brain.
Yeah, a little window opening up here into the black box. So basically, we're saying we've sort of looked at where we've been, thought about where we're going, we've recalibrated our hearts to understand what are we basing that in, what are the things that are the priorities for us and why. And we've basically said that's the big picture. And now we need to split that down. If we are saying that big picture is just the accumulation of lots of small decisions, lots of daily little habits, we're now breaking that down into what practically day by day, hour by hour, can we be doing in order to really come to those larger goals at the end of the year.
I like that
trellis is almost like a sort of filter for like all of the things I could potentially spend my time on. I've decided at the beginning of the year, I'm going to filter those in this way. And I'm going to say no to some things and yes to other things as a result of that. Nice.
Right. We've got to keep moving through the order.
Let's get through it.
Okay. Be where he has placed you. Be where he's placed you. I found this one very interesting. So this is a section of your audit. I guess it's pretty popular now, Robin. I don't know if you'd agree with this, but if you said to someone, you know, what is your meaning and purpose and deepest idea, that is very future orientated, probably not in your current environment, but you're off saving something in some other super glamorous location like Australia, or you're finding yourself in New Zealand. But the fact that you brought us back and just said, be where he's placed you, I thought was very striking. So why have you included this section in your order?
Yeah, I think it's something that we're not very good at. So I don't think we're very good at, as a kind of a, as a culture, at accepting our placedness. So we are, by definition, limited beings. I am in this room right now, and even though I am on the phone with you guys, physically I'm here and I can't be anywhere else. And if I take a step towards that place, then I step away from this place. And obviously that's true physically, but I think it's also true emotionally. You know, your classic, if you get your phone out in front of your girlfriend or your kids, then you're not present in the same way. And it's kind of scaling that up and going, well, actually, where are you right now? And taking stock of that and go, well, actually, am I neglecting some of the sense in which I'm placed here, the relationships, the roles I have? And how can I be more intentional about being present rather than always trying to be somewhere else? Or as you say, yeah, looking ahead to the future rather than accepting the place I am in the present.
And interestingly, nestled in that sentence is be where he has placed you. Mm. So your Christian worldview is that it is not an accident that Robin Ham is up in Cumbria.
Amen.
Do you know what I mean? It's not, yeah, it's not an accident, which again gives more significance to that, because you could be like, I've got to get out of Cumbria, get down the M6, get down the M40, and get to London and make a name for myself. Oh, sorry, that's very London-centric. You could think that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't. You'll have a way better life.
You could go to another city.
Yeah, sorry. Should I do that again? You could think you need to get on the M6 and go down to Manchester, to Media City, to make a name for yourself.
But, or, heaven forbid, even north to somewhere like Edinburgh, for example.
I'm sorry, that's what you're getting at. Right, anyway. Right.
And obviously you can choose to move, and but a sense in which the place you are, the people that you're bumping into, you know, there's no accident to that, and there's value in that. We don't really like the ordinary, and maybe this is the kind of the hyper-connectedness of our world today, is we're always looking elsewhere, thinking the grass is greener elsewhere, trying to be elsewhere. But actually, the ordinary has value. And that goes back to the point we were making earlier, doesn't it? About the ordinary days actually making up our lives. And, yeah.
So for an example of this in my life, we've got bad cladding on our building, the block of flats that we live in. And that has been a source of frustration for me, because it's meant that we kind of are trapped here. Like, we can't really think about moving or sort of progressing, if you like, in that area of our lives. And I found that really challenging. But this is really, really helpful to think, well, this is not an accident. If I believe that God has placed me here, then that isn't an accident. And therefore, what are my roles here? What are the things that I can do in my current scenario? I think so often, you know, we are encouraged to be looking ahead and thinking about what's next. And it's super helpful just to bring it back to the present and the now and think, how can I really be intentional and make the most of where I am today?
Mm. Brilliant. Right, last one. Specific trajectories versus reasoning your season.
Wow.
Specific trajectories versus reasoning your season.
We're really getting into our PwC management consultant persona. Yeah, now. Exactly. This is serious. Specific trajectories
matrix
versus reasoning your season. All right.
Okay, here we go. What do you mean, Robin? Tell us.
So trajectory is one of those words that when you say out loud, it's like, how's it meant to sound again? It's easy to kind of say, oh, how am I doing? Trying to put that on a bigger canvas. So rather than just kind of analyzing this moment, it's kind of going, well, actually, what is the trajectory I am on in each of the different areas of my life that might be important to me? Imagining, well, actually, I'm on a journey, you know, in what direction am I headed? The phrase I use in the audit is, it's so easy to reason your season and to think, well, okay, I've got this reason and that excuse and that rationale for why life doesn't look like this. But actually, if you plot out your life on a trajectory, then you own it a bit more. And it stops you from just making excuses. And of course, there are, you know, we had a baby in October. Of course, life is going to be crazy. It'd be foolish to not acknowledge that in how you understand and frame your life. But I guess it's trying to say, in terms of the big things that matter in life, what is the trajectory you're on? We're all becoming someone. And yeah, are you becoming the kind of person you want to become?
Can you give us some top excuses?
Yeah, top excuses. What do I use? Like life is messy at the moment, isn't it? And busyness is massive, isn't it? We just think, okay, life is just so busy at the moment. But how often is that the first thing we say? Life is busy right now. Well, it's always going to be like that if nothing changes. Yeah, I guess had a lot on. Well, what is the lot that we've had on, and why have we let that lot be on? It's those kind of things, and yeah, it's got to be kind to ourselves. So like we've come out of a crazy time, kind of the. So it's not trying to beat ourselves up, but it's trying to just go, well, where's this going? Who am I becoming? Am I kind of taking ownership of that?
So this is your way of thinking forwards, basically. You're thinking about trajectory. Where am I going to be 3, 5, 10, 20 years time? And as you're doing that, basically, how much are you kind of reasoning your season and kind of explaining the way they are at the moment, and actually draw a line through that and go, okay, but if you extrapolate this season, suppose it goes on for a long time. Then where are you going to end up? Just like a bit of a busy fool? Are you going to be a kind of grumpy fool?
It's like a stream kind of that's wearing down a kind of a path. You know, it becomes harder and harder, doesn't it, to kind of make a new path for the stream, because you kind of got that rut. Again, it kind of connects to the habits. It connects to the ordinary days, actually trying to take ownership and go, well, actually, if I want the water to go somewhere else, then I'm going to need to do something about that.
I think we're there. So we've got looking back, recalibrating the heart. Then we're thinking about how to make the most of our days, be where he's placed you. And then trajectories, think about your forward trajectory versus reasoning the current season that you're in.
Boom. Well done. Completed. Nailed it.
Nailed it. What's next?
Well, this is where, I guess I'd say involving other people in the process is really good, because it gives you a chance to go, well, actually meeting up with someone and just talking through your audit, I think is a really helpful way to kind of, again, to help you own it and to involve others in who you want to be, and brings a kind of a sense of what you might call accountability as well. This, you know, you can download this and go, okay, man, this is overwhelming. This is 22 pages, but it's just the simple kind of thing of taking a step back, looking back, looking forward, looking within. It's just really good to do that. You can kind of push it as much as you want in terms of how deep you go, but just that exercise in terms of owning who we are as people is helpful.
Brilliant. In our show notes, we're going to link your bite-sized version of the audit.
Boom.
You could even make it a poster, couldn't you, in your room?
Yeah, just print it out, stick it up.
I love it. Any final words, Robin, you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Life is a breath, isn't it? It's so good to just take that step back and go, who am I? What am I about? You can't ask a more important question.
Love it.
I love it. Thank you.
I think, Robin, honestly, just reflecting back as we've done this life audit, having felt a little bit overwhelmed and, dare I say it, slightly skeptical to begin with, I would say, Robin, I'm a convert. I've enjoyed it.
Brilliant. That's cool to hear. I mean, yeah, it's just been helpful for me. Sharing it is a joy, and it'll be great to hear other people's input on what they found helpful and shape it.
Awesome. Thanks, Robin.